Hello, this is Joan with the Bloomington Normal Pantograph dated Thursday, February 7th, 2019. We will begin today's reading with the article headlined, Community Vibe, Space 417 Draws Entrepreneurs to Downtown Bloomington, by Maria Nagel. Bloomington. Jennifer McDade had been selling vintage items online and monthly at the Third Sunday Market at the Interstate Center as a hobby business. But in November, she opened Elemental Market and Art Hive in two of eight newly created boutique office spaces in unused second-story spaces re-engineered by downtown property owner Mike Manna. When I came up here and I saw the spaces that Mike had put together, they just welcomed this idea of a vintage market, said McDade. These objects have their own stories, and they're kind of living their second or third lives up here. Manna created the collection of small offices, which he calls Space 417, by knocking through a second floor wall that separated the historic buildings he owns at 415 and 417 North Main Street. He learned from the McLean County Historical Society that it had been at least 100 years since the second floors were occupied. I think that when I am up here, I love the fact that we're starting to bring space back to life for a second, third, or fourth time, said McDade. For me, this is really sort of a laboratory of how you can, as individuals and as businesses, come together and co-create with one another. McDade, a former Bloomington alderman who also works for an insurance company, was the third person to open a business at Space 417. She uses one of the offices to house her vintage shop and a second space, separated by pocket doors, for a community art-making space modeled after the Art Hive concept started 25 years ago in Canada. Since I have come up here, three more businesses have joined us, she said, so we're at a total now of six really small micro-businesses, all with a very community, creative vibe. The spaces range in size from 350 to 600 square feet, with monthly rental rates from $200 to $575. In addition to being affordable, the spaces have provided the six female entrepreneurs an opportunity to form a community of support among themselves. Jessica Warland located her photography business there in early January. While the boutique offices at Space 417 on Main Street are not traditional co-working spaces, we each have our own doors and pay rent individually, we're getting more than just space from the arrangement, said Warland. We've created a community of support, inspiration, and co-creation that's allowing us to grow our impact that was previously limited by working from home, she said. Allison Carr and Amy Wolf are renting one of the spaces for an art studio where they can work and show their artwork. It's nice that Manna is doing something for the buildings. He actually took this space and made it into something really cool, said Carr. Some upper floors in other buildings downtown are not being utilized, and they are going to waste, said Carr. They're just decaying because nobody takes care of them. Kirsten Hodling-Zona, a poet, life coach, and Illinois State University professor who teaches poetry and several literature courses, was the first person to lease a space there. After reading a Pantograph article about Manna's renovation, she called him immediately. It was 3 in the afternoon. The next morning I came and saw it at 9, and I leased it the next day, she said. What drew me to the space is Mike considers this whole collection of spaces to be an artistic expression. It's not just a real estate venture, Hodling-Zona added. He came in and navigated this space with an artist's eye, leaving what belongs and cleaning up what doesn't. Building the skylights, but leaving the plaster walls. I really appreciated that nuance in his own eye. I felt like this space was perfect for what I want to do. She opened Learn to Thrive, a business that grew out of her vision of having a physical space and a concept about learning as the core of thriving. Learn to Thrive welcomes creators to work, play, teach, and learn in an artistically inspiring, natural light-filled space by providing a variety of rental options for individuals and organizations to use her space, said Hodling Zona. Sarah Nanning Coaching and Mirkai Studio 6 round out the 6 businesses in the space. Only one space remains available, but an interested party is actively pursuing it, Mana said this week. The next story is entitled, Dwight Being Considered for $20 Million ICE Detention Facility for Illegal Immigrants, by Kevin Barlow. Dwight. The Dwight Planning Commission will consider an annexation agreement later this month that could be the first step in bringing a federal detention center for illegal immigrants to the Livingston County Village. The commission will consider the matter on February 19th and forward a recommendation to the village board, Village President Jared Anderson said Wednesday. This is a piece of property that is currently not in the village of Dwight, and it's just one of the things that has to occur in a long process for something like this to happen, said Anderson. Immigration Centers of America, headquartered in Richmond, Virginia, has contacted village officials about an 88-acre parcel of land near Interstate 55 and Illinois 17 for a federal center to house 1,200 men awaiting immigration hearings. The facility would be managed by U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE. The proposal does not include the vacant Dwight Correctional Center, a state women's prison that was closed in 2013 by the Illinois Department of Corrections, in a cost-cutting move. Calls to the Immigration Centers of America were not immediately returned on Wednesday. If the detention center is built, Anderson said, the estimated $20 million facility would employ about 280 people. The deal, though, is far from final, he added. They, the company, are scouting several locations around the country, he said. They have certain requirements that they are looking for, such as they want it near railroads and a hospital nearby. It should be near a major city like Chicago, and so we have a lot of the things they are looking for. Amtrak has a depot in Dwight, and OSF Healthcare St. James John W. Albrecht Medical Center is in nearby Pontiac. Dwight, with a population of about 4,200, is about 80 miles southwest of Chicago. The facility would be located on Dwight's western edge. Adam Donce, the CEO for the Greater Livingston County Economic Development Council, said the additional jobs would be great news for the area. We recognize the potential of a significant economic impact which may result if Immigration Centers of America develops a facility in Dwight, he said. It is anticipated that approximately 280 jobs and approximately $14 million of payroll would be associated with the project. That said, several rounds of review by local and federal officials remain prior to project approval. Anderson said that he has talked with local residents about the proposed project. I know there are some things on social media that haven't been all that positive, but really everyone I have talked with has been very positive. We lost the prison several years ago, and that really hurt us as far as jobs, and something like this could be a real benefit for that. Immigration Centers of America was founded in 2008 and operates a detention center in Farmville, Virginia. The company has several pending contracts to build other facilities and would have to be the recipient of a formal bid from the government in order to move forward. Detainees who are facing criminal charges would be housed in county jails and not in the detention center. The rooms at the detention center would be unlocked and the detainees would have access to exercise facilities if the facility is managed similar to the Farmville complex. The Dwight Village Board could consider the annexation agreement on February 25th. Here's a story entitled, Foundation Director Retiring, Franklin Proud of Work at Normal-Based Illinois Heart and Lung, by Paul Sweech. Normal. the executive director of an organization that has placed life-saving automated external defibrillators, AEDs, throughout McLean County, sponsored CPR AED training days, and presented the annual Women's Health Night, is retiring. Kathy Franklin, executive director of the Normal-based Illinois Heart and Lung Foundation for 14 years, is stepping down effective April 12th. I am proud to be associated with an organization that improves lives, Franklin said at the foundation office on the Advocate Broman Medical Center campus on Wednesday. I consider myself lucky to have worked with Kathy, said Wendy Schaefer, immediate past president of the foundation board of directors. I have had the opportunity to see her as a leader in the community and have witnessed her passion for her work. Franklin was a member of the marketing and community relations staff at what was then called Broman Regional Medical Center in Normal for several years. After David Selzer, who had been executive director of Illinois Heart and Lung Foundation, moved on to another position, the board asked Franklin to do contract work for that foundation in late 2004. In 2005, she was named executive director. I already respected the physicians here, and it combined two things I was interested in, healthcare and community service, Franklin said. I had an opportunity to make a difference. I love that. The foundation's mission is to create community awareness and education to promote healthy life choices. Since 1998, the foundation has sponsored Women's Health Night, which, at its height, attracted 2,500 attendees. Attendance has declined the past couple of years, which is why the foundation revealed in November that the 2019 fair is being retooled into a family health expo to focus on wellness and fitness for the entire family. The event will be April 2nd at Illinois Wesleyan University's Shirk Center. During Franklin's tenure, the foundation revived its program to place AEDs throughout the community. AEDs can restore heart rhythm to someone experiencing sudden cardiac arrest, which happens when heartbeat stops abruptly. Since 2013, Operation Revive has given 149 AEDs to first responders, schools, and other not-for-profits, Schaefer said. The foundation was able to do that by raising $250,000 from the community. I have had the opportunity to celebrate lives saved, she said. Another highlight, Franklin said, was the development of an attack asthma camp. The camp will be in June at the Boys and Girls Club of Bloomington Normal and will include information about asthma triggers, symptoms, and response plans, Franklin said. But Franklin, 62, of Lexington, said she wants to spend more time with her husband John and their family. I believe someone younger can come in and take this to a whole new level, she said. Schaefer, an attorney with Illinois Farm Bureau, said the board is beginning the search process and hopes to name a new executive director in March. The next article is entitled, Francois sells Bloomington architectural firm, but he's not retiring, by Maria Nagel. Bloomington. Russell Francois has sold his longtime Bloomington architectural firm, but that doesn't mean he is retiring. Since early January, Francois Associates Architects at 118 West Washington Street in downtown Bloomington has been going by a different name, Charnett Associates Architects. We're just changing from Francois to Charnett, said new owner Paul Charnett, an architect who joined the firm in 2014 after Francois had worked with him on various projects since 2009. It's the same personalities here. It's still the same work that we're doing. I intend to continue to be here, added Francois. The whole idea is that we're changing nothing except ownership and who is running the office and who the future of the office is. As Francois explained how he wants to spend less time on the firm's business aspects and more time on design work, he used markers to sketch on the glass top of a large conference table. Running a small practice of whatever sorts is very demanding, said Francois, adding the firm employs 6 associates, including Charnette and himself. And the demand that I address presently and prefer is design. He said he is fortunate that Charnette is very capable and interested in purchasing the business because for every 100 officers that are available, there are only 60 buyers. Russell has been a tremendous mentor, but he's also been somebody who has been so incredibly encouraging, said Charnette. When I see what he has done from a design perspective and all of the efforts that have been made in this community, for me, I want so badly to continue that same legacy. Francois, a Louisiana native, moved to Bloomington in 1977 with his wife and then one-month-old daughter to join Hilfinger, Asbury, Cafode, and Abels, a successive firm to the Pillsbury architecture firm. When the company was later bought by Shive Hattery Incorporated, rather than taking the partnership he was offered, Francois opened his own general practice of architecture in November 1990 in what was then the Miller Davis Building. Francois admits he was scared about making the move, but the bank took the risk and my wife, more importantly, was employed, he said, grinning. In 1994, he moved the office to its current location in a historic downtown building at Washington and Center Streets. Our experience encompasses a wide range of architectural building types, including municipal, educational, institutional, financial, residential, commercial, and ecclesiastical projects, said Charnette. Among the services the firm delivers, design is its chief concern, noted Francois. Over the years, it's safe to say that we've taken down buildings and erected others in their place, he said. Always, I am concerned with making certain that what we put up in their place exceeds the design level of what we took down. The firm's list of clients and projects is long. Some of the more notable in the Twin Cities have been the Town of Normal's Children's Discovery Museum, the Community Cancer Center and Addition, and renovations of the Brown Evans and Eisenberger buildings, Castle Theater, and Bloomington Junior High and High School campus. When asked what their favorite project was, he and Charnette both chuckled because, they said, their pat answer is always the next one. Here's a story entitled, Author Speaks at Reagan Dinner. Wilbur, Assassination Attempt Had Impact on 40th President. By Lenore Sabota. Eureka. The architect of a book on the attempted assassination of President Ronald Reagan says there are lessons to be learned from what happened that day on March 30th, 1981. Los Angeles Times reporter Del Quentin Wilbur, who wrote Rawhide Down, The Near Assassination of Ronald Reagan, said the incident showed the importance of level-headed leadership and not overreacting in a crisis. It also showed the need for avoiding complacency and increasing security around the president, said Wilbur, the keynote speaker at a dinner Wednesday night at Reagan's alma mater, Eureka College, sponsored by the Ronald W. Reagan Society of Eureka College. Wednesday would have been the 108th birthday of the 40th President of the United States. He died in 2004. Reagan really showed his character that day, said Wilbur. You can't fake it when you're shot. His sense of humor and his caring for others both evident that day, said Wilbur. Not once but twice, Wilbur reports in his book, Reagan quipped to medical personnel that he hoped there were all Republicans, to which the lead doctor, Joe Giordano, replied, Today, Mr. President, we're all Republicans. When Reagan saw his wife, Nancy, come in, visibly shaken, he tried to put her at ease by saying, Honey, I forgot to duck. Wilbur said most people don't realize how close Reagan came to dying. The bullet lodged inches from his heart, and he lost about half his blood volume, he said. He came within 2 to 3 minutes of dying, said Wilbur, who credited several actions by Secret Service agent Jerry Parr with saving Reagan's life, quickly shoving him into the limousine when shots rang out, recognizing that Reagan was seriously injured, and diverting the limo to a nearby hospital rather than the White House for prompt treatment. Wilbur said the assassination attempt changed Reagan. He felt he had been spared for a purpose and focused his efforts on decreasing the possibility of nuclear war with the Soviet Union, said Wilbur. The shooting also built a bond between Reagan and the American people, he said. As a reporter who covers criminal justice and national security matters from the Times Washington Bureau, Wilbur declined to make comparisons between the Reagan administration and the Donald Trump administration. It was a different era, he said. Trump isn't Reagan, but Obama wasn't Reagan either, and Putin isn't Gorbachev. Wilbur did cite one example of how times have changed. The first person to see Reagan after the shooting, outside of his family and people in his administration, was Tip O'Neill, a Democrat who was Speaker of the House at the time, noted Wilbur, and they prayed together. Would that happen today? Asked Wilbur, without answering his own question. Here's a story entitled Longtime Bloomington Tavern Winner's Lounge Now Closed by Kevin Barlow. Bloomington. Winner's Lounge, a longtime Bloomington tavern, also known as Winner's Bar and Grill, has closed, according to an announcement on its Facebook page. Yes, it is true, read an announcement. Winner's is closing its doors. So come out Tuesday for one last hurrah. Sad day. Let's go out with a bang. Calls on Wednesday to Winner's at 801 South Main Street, Bloomington, were not returned. In June, co-owner Brad Engel appeared before the Bloomington Liquor Commission and announced he and his brother Ryan were considering forming a new corporation called Engel Enterprises. However, because of the existing video gambling machines in the bar, state officials encouraged them to keep the name the same. Brad Engel did not indicate any plans to close the business at that time. He could not be reached for comment on Wednesday. According to Pantograph Archives, Dave Engel became part owner of the Casey Jones Lounge in 1982 and took over operations in April 1984. As a requirement for a liquor license, Engel was required to visit neighbors' homes in order to establish a rapport with them. In 1986, he became the sole proprietor, renaming it Winner's Bar and Grill. He owned the bar until he died on April 18, 2018. At that time, it was the oldest bar in town owned by the same person, according to his obituary. Engel's sons, Brad and Ryan, inherited the business. Brad operated the bar while Ryan continued his career in the Air Force in Ohio. The next story is entitled, Water Damage Company Opens Bloomington Store, by Kevin Barlow. Bloomington. A new water damage restoration option is available in Bloomington Normal. The Ann Arbor, Michigan-based 1-800-WATER-DAMAGE of Peoria, Bloomington, has opened a store at 511 South Denver Street, Bloomington. The store will provide residential and commercial service to help transform properties affected by fire, mold, and water damage, said operator Jordan Cohn. I feel extremely fortunate to call Illinois home and to raise my three boys here, Cohn said in a statement announcing the store's opening. As an active member of the community, we will provide restoration aid to local residents in need at any time. The safety and well-being of this community is our top priority, and you can count on us to assist quickly. Cohn said his team can assist with water and flood damage restoration, fire and smoke cleanup, mold remediation, sewage cleanup, and tile, grout, carpet, and upholstery cleaning. Crew members are fully vetted, certified, and insured. Crews are available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, he said, and are committed to customer service. Free estimates are available. The company is owned by the Belfour Franchise Group. The Bloomington store will serve clients throughout Central Illinois. For more information or to contact 1-800-WATER-DAMAGE of Peoria, Bloomington, visit the website at www.1800waterdamage.com/Peoria-Bloomington or call 309-233-3417. Here's a story entitled, Sheriff, Flanagan Cornell student accused of assaulting resource officer, by Kelsey Watznauer. Flanagan. A Flanagan Cornell high school student was taken into custody Tuesday after several fights broke out at the school and a police officer and teacher were assaulted, officials said. The 18-year-old student, Andrew Kozak, is accused of assaulting a resource officer and a teacher, said Livingston County Sheriff Tony Childress. Kozak is charged with 2 counts of aggravated battery and is being held at the Livingston County Jail in lieu of $5,000, Childress said. Other students also were involved in the fight on Tuesday, and disciplinary action will be taken, said Superintendent Jerry Farris. This is very unusual for our school. We have a small, close, family-like school, Farris said, with fewer than 200 students in the high school. They all know everybody. Childress said his department's investigation is ongoing. Today's pantograph also has some public safety items. The first one is entitled Cocaine. A Leroy man faces cocaine charges. William D. Tooley, 26, is charged with 3 counts of delivery of a controlled substance during alleged drug transactions in Normal. He is being held in lieu of $5,035 bond. Another item entitled Cocaine. Drug charges are pending against a Bloomington man. Alonzo Whitfield, 33, of the 2100 block of Rainbow Avenue, is charged with 5 counts of delivery of cocaine. The alleged drug sales occurred in Normal. He is held in lieu of $25,035. Here's an item from today's area calendar. Congreville Eureka Goodfield School District 140 Kindergarten Pre-Registration, 1 to 6 p.m. Thursday, today. Davenport Elementary School Eureka and Goodfield Elementary School. Congreville residents register at Goodfield. For age 5 by September 1st, bring certified birth certificate, 2 proofs of residency, and emergency phone numbers. Another calendar item for today, Uptown Covered in Chocolate, 4 to 7 p.m. today and Friday, shops and restaurants in Uptown Normal. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Pantograph for February 7th. Please stay tuned.